Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
She keeps lighting up the way, even on the darkest day. Dawn is breaking, all awaken from the night. From the shore into the waves, washing all the bitterness away, lifting darkness with your stillness and your grace. It's you I like, and you mean everything to me. It's you I like, 'cause you are light, and I see everything I need. It's alright, yeah. Shine bright, light up the skies above. Shine bright, do it with the ones you love. Shine bright, and never, ever, ever let it die. Shine bright, light up the stars above. Shine bright, and do it in the name of love. Shine bright, and I promise to never let it die. And if they ever make me choose, you know exactly what I'm gonna do. No question, second guessing, it's you I choose. Yeah, yeah, 'cause you are light, and I see everything I need. Yes, you are light. Yeah, yeah, shine bright.
Entire nation, welcome to the Star and Crescent Report. As always, we open up in the name of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, who is none other than Master Farad Muhammad, the almighty, all-wise, true and living God, Allah, who has come to us this day and granted us a divine mercy and reminder in the personage of the last and most surely the greatest of the apostles, prophets, and messengers of God to ever live. We speak about none other than our leader, teacher, and guide for these final days of judgment, the most holy and humble, Elijah Muhammad. And we greet all of our listening and viewing audiences with the greetings of peace, love, and paradise in the original language of Arabic, which means peace be unto you. We say to you all in both their names with love, As-salamu alaykum. For those of you who may wish to participate in our discussion today, you're welcome to call in at 347-989-0855. That's 347-989-0855. Or you can hit us up with a message at Hiram1555@yahoo.com. That's Hiram1555@yahoo.com. As always, we'd like to thank you for giving us another hour of your day and another day of your time. We'd like to thank the thousands of you who listen live from around the globe and the thousands of you who will download us later from all of our affiliate sites. Be it Hiram1555.tumblr.com, Twitter.com/Hiram1555, Facebook.com/Hiram1555, BlogTalkRadio.com/Hiram1555, and our main news blog, which is formerly TrumpetOfTruth.wordpress.com and also formerly SalamJournal.com and SalamJournal.org, which is now the Hiram1555 blog at Hiram1555.com. Again, my beloved family, let me say unto you all, As-salamu alaykum and Ramadan Mubarak. For those of you who are celebrating Ramadan and the prescribed month of December as prescribed by the last and the greatest messenger of God. Now, brothers and sisters, we had a lot of technical difficulties on the last show. I guess we were hitting them too hard, and they were messing with the audio, messing with everything, as always. So I'm going to say this at the beginning of the show. If I get knocked off the air, or if I get muted, please have patience and give me up to 5 minutes to get back on the air, okay? The dead zones will disappear when you go back and listen to the replay of the show. I think they automatically cut out dead zones now. And if you get disconnected or get knocked off, log back on or call back in. If you're blocked, hold on for about 20 seconds and then do the same. Call back in or log back in, okay? Let's get to the show. The Dead Zone Memoirs, entry number 2, The Crash Is On. Now, lately, black man and black woman and all of you who are listening around the world, America has been playing this game with her largest banker, her largest creditor, the largest manufacturer, China. And she has not alone, she's not been playing this game alone. She's been playing this game within the boundaries of Western domination. I'm going to explain what I'm talking about, okay? She is using her Western cohorts to try to enrage China and try to whitemail China into succumbing to her demands and her wishes. By arresting Huawei or Huawei or whichever one you want to see it, the vice president of Huawei or Huawei, which is one of the largest tech phone companies in the world, and hold them at ransom for trade talks so that China can capitulate on America's demand behind closed doors. Whether you know this or not, for all of you who are listening, this is a direct act of war. See, you don't understand the seriousness of what is going on behind closed doors. As we continue to tell you on every episode, that the entire world of mankind is headed towards war. Why? Because the Western world, especially America, the greatest and the dominant pillar of the Western world and the Western world order, is in decline. She's in decline, and she's declining at an enormous rate. And she is desperate, and she is doing what desperate powers do. She is, again, in the South China Sea provoking China. She's in the Sea of Japan provoking both China and Russia. She's on the Korean Peninsula provoking North Korea, China, and Russia, because remember, North Korea, South Korea, they share a land border with both China and Russia. So this is not only about nuclear weapons. This is about the total encirclement and surrounding of America's greatest enemies and those whom she perceives to be her greatest threats, especially economically and militarily. Look at what's going on. All of these nations, both China and Russia, are both in an economic union and somewhat in a military union. Both of these nations are de-dollarizing their economies and their trade with other nations at an enormous speed. As a matter of fact, I was looking at something, and Russia is not only doing it at an enormous rate, Russia is about to start back again selling Chinese bonds. Unheard of. She did it last year and the year before last, I believe. She was selling Euro bonds, and then she turned over to the Chinese Yuan bond. As a matter of fact, she has a clearinghouse in Russia. This has everything to do with the dollar. This has everything to do with a meltdown in the markets. Don't you see what's going on in the markets? Do you ever notice that every time the markets see a lot of trouble, right after that you hear about provocations by America in lands far away? These two are interconnected. The empire is desperate, and Great Britain is right along with her. France is right along with her. Germany is right along with her. Canada is with her. Australia is with her. All of these white or Western nations are in trouble. Here's an headline. It says, Russia considers issuing government bonds in yuan next year. Right? So, it says, and I'm just going to read the first paragraph. The Russian finance ministry hopes to place federal loan bonds in the Chinese yuan next year. Konstantin Vishkovsky, the head of the ministry's Department of National Debt and State-Owned Financial Assets, stated. Why did he state that? Because Russia had been placing sovereign debt sales or sovereign bond sales in the euro. But the euro is susceptible to American influence. And they have not been placing it in dollar sales because America is sanctioning Russia, right? But being that China is the largest manufacturer in the world, and being that China is the largest creditor nation in the world, with the largest amount of sovereign reserves, it would be wise to deal with the yuan to outstrip the euro and to outstrip the dollar. Because so many nations trade with China that it would be almost impossible for America or Europe to uproot the yuan. Remember a few years ago the yuan was added into the IMF currency basket? Remember that? Because China was putting pressure on the Western branches and they had threatened to just uproot the IMF and the World Bank with their own organizations. And the West blinked and capitulated and added the yuan into the sovereign currency basket, along with the yen, the British pound, the euro, and the dollar. Are you following me? This, brothers and sisters, I'm giving you a backdrop of the seriousness of the time. It is no coincidence that the decline of the dollar placed in the fall of America is to let you understand that with this goes America's power. And not just America. Listen to me good. When the dollar collapsed, because the European financial institutions, and you hear this all the time by Gregory Mannarino, you hear this all the time by Jim Rogers, you hear this all the time about all of these Western investors. They say that the global financial system is so intertwined, they call it globalism, that if someone coughs, the other one gets a cold or the other one sneezes. This is true in such a way. So when the dollar is under stress, so too are the economies that are bound by the dollar and have been relying on the dollar to keep them afloat. So I want to bring something to your attention here, okay? I'm going to play two clips that I wanted to play last week. One clip I had already played, but it's so relevant to what we're talking about right now and how all of these things economically are tied to the military sphere of things, right? And you'll start to connect the dots. You'll start to see a clear picture of why when this happens over here, then things flare up in Syria. Things flare up in the Donbass region of Ukraine. Then you'll see why America had provoked Russia in the Sea of Azov. You'll see why the U.S. and NATO are trying to justify deployment, which is against international law, of warships to the Black Sea. You'll see why right after America entered the Black Sea, the newest Russian naval corvette entered the Black Sea. You'll see why, out of the blue, that America's so-called warplanes that were doing exercises in the Sea of Japan crashed. Oh, you didn't hear much about this last week. You heard nitbits, little pieces. But from sources that was close to me, they said that the American warplanes were downed, not just fell out the air. They were downed. Okay? Maybe we'll go into it a little bit. But I'm just showing you a pattern here. That the desperation of this empire, wheresoever she goes, she's being trailed by navies who are just as powerful as she is, by economies that are just as powerful as she is, by air forces that have acquired what she has acquired, by militaries that are salivating to confront the empire head on, because she no longer has air superiority. This was her advantage in all of the military escapades that she had gone on around the world. But now, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us, that the nations would acquire what she had with her warplanes. You see China with two or three advanced warplanes now. You see Russia with advanced warplanes. These warplanes are to match America's air power. And if America no longer enjoys military superiority on the ground or in the air, how the hell can she put her will on the nations around the world? So you have a desperate empire bluffing the nations because her coffers at home are empty. And she's trying to cower the nations or pump the nations, as we say on the street, by trying to present this bold face of confidence and power. That's what bullies do, especially when they're at their most desperate times. You'll hear it in a boxing match when a fighter, he'll say, in the sixth round, I damaged my hand. That's why I didn't throw it that much. And so I was just going off adrenaline, and every now and then I would fake like I was going to throw my left hand or my right hand, and that was to keep my opponent at bay. This is what America is. She has a damaged left and right hand. She's suffering from exhaustion from the body blows economically and all of the geopolitical moves. Her stamina is in question, and now we're entering the championship rounds, and the empire will soon get exposed. I want you to pay close attention. These two clips I'm going to play for you are very short clips, all right? One I played for you about two shows ago, and this one, the other one I'll play for you right now. I want you to pay close attention. This is less than 2 minutes, and I want you to understand why America is trying to bluff the nation. Because even their own reports are saying they have no power economically or militarily to stand up to this. And remember, whenever I'm talking to you on the political part, there is a part of economics and military, and vice versa. You can't disconnect the three. They're all intertwined. So we must lay a base to get you to see the picture, the big picture. Not your neighborhood, not your corner, not your city, not just your state, but the entire sphere of global politics, economics, and geopolitics, okay? Bear with your brother. And I want you to pay close attention to this, and we'll address some of this on the other side of this clip.
U.S. defense panel has warned that the military is falling out of alignment with its key goals. The National Defense Strategy Commission submitted a report to Congress saying the U.S. needs to rebuild its military force capacity and capability in Europe. The document says that if the United States had to fight Russia in a Baltic contingency or China in a war over Taiwan, Americans could face a decisive military defeat. The commission calls for budget caps on military spending to be removed, and it says the wars in Afghanistan, Syria, and Iraq are holding the military back, causing the U.S. to neglect so-called great power competition. Arvind Vohra, a 2020 presidential hopeful for the U.S. Libertarian Party, says overseas interventions have harmed U.S. national security.
The reason that Americans are in danger right now, and they are, is because the U.S. military is creating enemies. They are creating enemies in Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan throughout the entire Middle East. We don't need to create more enemies. The United States is already spending more than the next several nations combined on military spending. I think what the report is reflecting is that the U.S. military has entirely lost sight of its actual purpose. The military's job is to keep the United States of America and our people safe at the lowest cost possible, to keep us safe with as low taxes as we can. And this move is a move in the wrong direction. We can be safer and have less and have lower taxes if we have the courage to say America's defense is important, but defending Israel and Saudi Arabia and France, that's not our job.
So you see, I'm just playing that clip right here, and we're going to go to the next clip in just a second. Think about this. I'm just going to put this on your mind. When is spending into the hundreds of billions and even black budget into the trillions enough? You claim and you thump your chest that you have the most powerful military on earth, and you spend more than all of the nations combined or whatever. You say that you're decades ahead. Then why are you constantly needing more money? Something's not right here. It does not take a rocket scientist to just sit down and analyze what is being said to you. Most people take this hook, line, and sinker. The reason America continues to need more money is because the military-industrial complex is corrupt as hell. When you got hammers costing $500, nails, $60, a toilet, $15,000. This is where the money is being spent. And just to show you just how crazy the political atmosphere is, and I'm not making this stuff up. You can Google this, or you can go to the Heinz 1555 blog and read the articles. Trump comes out, this was yesterday or the day before yesterday, Trump comes out and says $716 billion is too much spending on military. And I'm paraphrasing. Less than 3 hours later, he comes out and approves a bill of over three-quarters of $1 trillion. Now, he was just complaining. See, this is the madness in these people. You cannot believe anything they're saying. Now, mind you, listen to this. You can always find money for war. You can always look in your wallet and in your pocket and squeeze the public for more, for war, when you have an entire population suffering homelessness, unemployment, debt unseen with credit cards and college debt. You can't free your future leaders of tomorrow from student debt, but you can spend over $7,000 per second on Israel. I continue to tell you that Israel is the main component in the lie that upholds and promotes Christianity in the Western world. Israel is. This is why even as the economy is collapsing, even as the debt burden grows greater, as a matter of fact, if you look on the Heinz 1555 blog, they did another analysis, another study on America's deficit spending and her deficit, and again, month after month, she continues to be in the red in her trade deficit. She continues to be in the red in her government, her fiscal deficits, her state deficits, her county deficits, all of the municipalities. How in the hell can a nation prosper like that? Huh? You can save Israel financially. You can give her taxpayers' money. You can give her military, which goes back to taxpayers' money. You can give her billions. while your people within your own borders are suffering and begging for bread. The only way that this makes sense to them is that Israel must be the linchpin in something greater. Because if Israel falls, and it will, because no, according to science, no foreign or unnatural germ can exist in a natural state without killing the host and itself. It must be removed. Is that not right? Israel was never in there. That was Palestine. And they displaced an entire people to hold up this banner, this lie about Christianity. Brothers and sisters, I know I'm all fear some people. But listen to what I'm saying, and I dare the entire world, a scope of man, woman, child, dog, animal, everything, to dispute me on what I'm saying. Because we have historical dates. We can point to these things. We can show you when they were established. We can show you how they were established and how they were maintained. Like, just like with America, it was established, Israel was established on the extermination and the genocide of an entire people. How has it been maintained? Through those same methods. Is that not right? So Israel, in words, in the Middle East, is just a reflection of the real Israel in the Western world, which is America. You understand? Think about that. That report is putting it mildly. But if you go and look at the real report and say America could lose the next war, America would lose the next wars in the real report. But they have to dress it up for the public to say, maybe America could lose. But in the real report, America would lose. So if she knows that she would lose, and yet she's still provoking the nation, what is she doing? She's faking, isn't it? She's trying to cow you into, by an image of what she used to be. And this is why the so-called alternative media, and this is why the so-called mainstream media is needed, so that they can project these things in your mind, because perception is not always reality. But perception can rule over reality if it's strong enough for a certain period of time. So the perception of the world is weaker than America. But in reality, America is the greatest debtor nation in the history of the world. America's military is in decline. America's political position is in decline. And if the world ever, and it will, stand up and challenge this perception, boom goes the dynamite. Let's go further, because all of this points toward an economic, political, and geopolitical clash and crash, okay? This is the one I played a while ago, and listen to what Max Kaiser said. The U.S. empire of debt will go to war to stop the emergence of the petrol you own. Now, what does that have to do with what we're talking about? This goes back to her, to America demanding that Canada, against international law. See, this is what Muhammad talks about those laws that this white man makes up, how they're retractable. And they use them only to their benefit. And when it is to hand-tie them or hog-tie them or restrain them from doing things, they ignore them. This is what Muhammad was talking about. And it's been put on display internationally for the entire world to see. But China has warned that there will be some serious repercussions for this blatant violation of Chinese sovereignty. I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, you can believe what you want to. I'm just going to lay out the facts, okay? I want you to listen to what Max Kaiser said months ago, all right? And this is only a minute and a half, a little over a minute and a half.
First of all, they're very brave to do this because countries that have tried to exit the oil dollar matrix have met terrible ends. Of course, Saddam Hussein.
Stop right there for a minute. I heard something. He said, of course, nations that tried to exit the dollar have met with horrible ends. This is why China, let me preface the clip again. This is why China instead of just talking about it, they were being about it. They put in institutions around the globe that can counter Western institutions. They put in things that can counter Western sanctions. This is why they started that trade swap, the currency swap, all of these things. This is why the largest trading bloc, the ASEAN, the Asian nations, not the ASIAN, but the ASEAN, which is an organization of Asian nations, which is the largest trading bloc in the world, uses the yuan. You understand? China not only built up its economy, because remember, Libya built up its economy, but Libya did not build up its military to rebuff the empire and its colonial former masters. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us that this would happen, that China would bide its time, and it would chase down this American white man like that American white man chased down our red Indian brother. And if you look around at anything that America was once dominant in, China has overtaken America or is on the same level with America or is about to overtake America. I'm just saying. These are facts. We can point to them and we can prove them. The Dead Zone Memoirs, entry number 2. The crash is on, and war is soon to follow. Pay close attention to Mr. Kaiser again. I'm going to play the whole clip, but I just wanted to preface the clip with what he was just saying about how America, anybody that moves away from a dollar, she provokes them to war. But see, this won't end up good for her. So pay close attention. Here we go right here. Excuse me.
First of all, they're very brave to do this because countries that have tried to exit the oil dollar matrix have met terrible ends. Of course, Saddam Hussein wanted to trade oil in euros, so he was killed. You had Muammar Gaddafi wanted to trade his energy in something other than U.S. dollars. He was killed. So the track record here is pretty dire. So kudos to China for taking this project on. You've got China and Russia and the Saudis are looking to escape the U.S. dollar, U.S. dollar hegemony. They're looking to de-dollarize. That's a concept we see all over the world right now as countries want to escape from the U.S. military-industrial complex. These countries around the world are tired of funding America's military adventurism by being a party to the empire of debt, as it's known around the world, the U.S. dollar, and they want to split off. They want their autonomy. They will fight back. They will start a war. You know, maybe they'll start a war between Japan and China. You know, maybe they'll start a war with North Korea. You know, America will do anything to keep the U.S. dollar as world reserve currency. They will invade a country like Afghanistan. They'll stop at nothing because this is the basis of the U.S. empire. It's not land-based. It's not based on material goods. It's based on rent-seeking. It's based on lending dollars, getting that income, and then when countries can't pay, they dismantle the assets and take them over. We saw in Latin America, South America. This is how America builds its empire.
See? So now you're getting an in-depth look. I'm not just speaking out of my head, just throwing random things out. I'm able to prove to you what I'm saying. And this is why you see the flare-ups. And have you ever noticed that America is never guilty? I don't care. Her media, her politicians, they're never guilty. No matter how many people they bomb and kill, no matter how many nations they ravage, they go back and, oh, it was a mistake, faulty intelligence. Regardless to hundreds of thousands of people killed, societies destroyed, families destroyed, they're never brought before the so-called ICC, the International Criminal Court, because where the ICC sits itself, that nation should be brought before another body for the crimes that it committed. None of the leaders who bomb nations in the Western world, they don't go on trial. It's only the African and Asian and South and Central American nations and the smaller nations from the Caribbean and all of these. See, this is a double standard. This is why God must uproot, defunct, and destroy this entire Anglo system. There's a justification for this because it is unjust, parasitic, and corrupt to the core. And it is based on white exceptionalism at all costs. Is that not right? I dare anybody to dispute me on this. And so as I was saying to you, in the midst of a collapse here at home, because that's what's going on. Marcus, I was looking at one writer said that within the last few weeks, America's markets have lost $1 trillion. Over a trillion dollars. Now, the reason she's losing this wealth, and I'm going to just put it out here. Some of you think just because the system is corrupt, she's losing this. Just because she's coming under attack, she's losing this. Those are good reasons. But what lies at the core of why she's losing this wealth is because she refused to share this wealth with her ex-slaves and our red Indian brothers. Because we are more deserving of this wealth because we built this nation. Our blood was shed to build this nation, and our blood was shed and is shed to maintain this nation. And without the doing of justice, the hands of time turns against that which is, exploits the aboriginal owners. Do you understand? These things are not going happening for no reason. Just like you see these storms hitting the eastern coast of America after that major hurricane that hit that was larger than the state of North Carolina. One of the most devastating storms, which destroyed an entire military base, her F-22s, her F-35s, and caused billions in damage to the military base on top of billions of damage across that area of America. That same area where some of the first slaves were brought in through. Faced destruction. And then after that, what Muhammad says, don't say destruction once, but say destruction many. So one calamity right after the other with more snowstorms arriving. Do you understand? The intense cold, the disruption of lives and flights and commuting. This costs tens of billions of dollars. And all of it lies at the root of America trying to keep you ignorant to the day of her judgment. Listen closely to this. I'm going to play. And if you think I'm lying about $7,000 per second or per minute or whatever for Israel, I'm going to play this clip, and then I'm going to go. I'm going to play this clip about Israel, and I want you to pay close attention to this. This is about 5 minutes, but I'll probably cut it off. I just want to prove what I'm saying so that people don't talk out the side of their mouth saying, well, this brother just made up a number, okay? I'm going to play a clip for you. I want you to listen.
The United States is on the verge of enacting legislation for the largest military aid package to a foreign country in U.S. history. The package is a staggering $38 billion aid to Israel, with the amount likely to go up in future years. Last week, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul placed a hold on the bill. The senator is now facing backlash from several pro-Israel groups. Senator Paul responded to his critics in an exclusive statement to Jewish Insider, saying, I'm not for foreign aid in general. If we are going to send aid to Israel, it should be limited in time and scope, so we aren't doing it forever. And it should be paid for by cutting the aid to people who hate Israel and America. He wrote, this is a stance I've taken for many years. Senator Paul may filibuster against it if the bill goes to a vote. The current bill has been in process for several months now and is reaching its final stages. Joining me now is Executive Director, If Americans Knew, Allison Weir. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Allison, I want to start with asking you, how much money do you think would actually go into Israel under this current legislation? I mean, the numbers are saying $38 billion could go up. What do you think the numbers will be at?
It will be a minimum of $38 billion over the next 10 years. It can go up, and if it can go up, it will go up, given that Israel partisans and donors and organizations are very influential with our political candidates. So the minimum will be $38 billion. That works out to $7,000 per minute from the United States to Israel, and also is about $23,000 per Jewish Israeli family of four. This is the kind of money we're talking about, but the U.S. media aren't telling people about it.
That's a lot of money, and like you said, this bill is something that the American people are not necessarily informed about. So if you can give us a little bit more information, are there any problems with this aid package?
There are quite a few problems. First of all, the general American public already feels that we give Israel too much money. A survey a while ago showed that 60% of the respondents said that we were already giving Israel too much money, even before it's now about to become even larger. This works out to about, this is about, on average, 7,000 times more per capita to Israelis than anyone else around the world. Another problem is it violates a number of U.S. laws that have been in place for a long time. These aren't enforced, but it violates U.S. laws. On top of that, Israel has a long record of human rights violations, of violating international law. So by funding Israeli actions, by giving Israel this massive amount of military aid, it will create more tragedy in the region and more hostility to Americans, quite likely. So there's a great deal that's problematic about this legislation.
Well, and it's the largest amount in U.S. history in aid to a foreign country. Now, Senator Rand Paul has voiced his opinion on it. It's very clear. Is there anybody else that we're hearing that's objecting the bill?
Very few, because as we mentioned, almost nobody knows about it. The media, this has been in process. Really, it was introduced last March. It was voted on in August, then there was more voting in September. Now it's before the Senate again because the politicians keep making it even more pro-Israel. So it contains a lot of additional perks for Israel that no one knows about, because despite the fact that it's extremely newsworthy, American taxpayers, many people are cutting back spending because of financial concerns. I think many people would be objecting if they knew about the bill. In addition, many more Americans than before are aware of Israeli actions in Gaza, the systemic discrimination in Israel itself. So many people would object to this bill, I feel, if they knew about it, but almost no one knows about it.
Well, and that's our job, to tell people. Now, Rand Paul is objecting it and could filibuster it. How likely, we have about a minute left, so I just want to get your opinion. How likely is this bill to be passed?
It's extremely likely to be passed. The majority leader has gotten $1.5 million from Israel partisans. The majority of the Congress is afraid of the Israel lobby. They get campaign donations from Israel partisans. If they don't toe the line, they know there's a very large likelihood that they'll be defeated in the next election. So, yes, I think this will be passed.
Well, we'll have to follow it and see if Senator does indeed filibuster. Allison, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Hey.
So, you see, think about that. I'm just bringing something on your mind because most people don't address these issues. America must have herself highly invested in Israel, and it must be something secretive. Not what she's telling you, for her to push these quiet bills through to give her the largest aid package in the history of America, a minimum of $38 billion when she turns a blind eye when you ask for reparations. Now, you suffered, you the descendants of sufferers, your children are suffering, and yet when you ask for a handout, we don't like affirmative action. And yet you're giving billions of our money to a made-up entity that is occupying Palestine. Something ain't right here. And all of this, I want you to think about the contempt that they have, not only for the so-called regular American people, but the contempt that they have for you, black man or black woman, whoever have worked or is working in America, as they take your tax dollars without your approval. Now, your child is trying to better themselves and go to a university or a college or a vocational school or this and that. They're getting student aid or financial aid or loans, right? They're under a heavy tax burden, heavy debt burden that they cannot extricate themselves out of, because you can't just file bankruptcy and get out of student debt. You can't file bankruptcy and get out of child support debt. But they are allocating a minimum of $23,000 per Israeli family of your money while your children are buried in debt. $7,000 a minimum per minute. While you can't pay your light bill, your phone bill, put food in the refrigerator, buy your drugs for your health, you know, your prescription drugs. What the hell is this? This shows you the mind-boggling politics of America. Allah has them in derision. You understand? And all while this is going on, poverty has become America's best friend. Homelessness has really acquainted herself with America, not just the inner city. This reaches beyond the inner city. It has leaked out beyond the bounds of constraint, of inner cityism. It is now in outer cityism, in the burbs, where homes are being foreclosed on because of a corrupt system that inherently feeds upon the people and takes what little wealth they have. It is a blood-sucking system. They are parasitic by nature. And this is why you hear me constantly call the American government, the American Republic, and the American financial institution succubus, or they are vampires. They're leeches. And this is what leeches or vampires or succubuses do. They latch on to a host body because they cannot sustain their own life, and they suck the blood or the life out of the host body. And when they're done sucking the life or the blood of a host body, they detach themselves and find another host so that they can maintain their life, their virility, while they discard what they used up. This is the American system, this is the Western system, and this is why God is justified in removing this devil system that has gone globally and has dominated the nations of the earth. The crash is on. These are the Dead Zone Memoirs, entry number 2. Listen to what's going on in America. And we're going to go back to China. We're going to go back to the military spending. We're going to go back to all that. But since we talked about how she's sending so malevolently, sending Israel $7,000 per minute, and each Israeli family a minimum of $23,000. Let's reflect back on what's going on in America's own city limits, okay? I want you to pay close attention to this.
In July, we brought you a story about poverty in Alabama, which was spurred by a report from the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights, Philip Alston. Alston toured America, spotlighting third world-style poverty in our first world country. NewsHour Weekend Special Correspondent Simon Ostrowski continues following in Alston's footsteps with a report on poverty in Los Angeles. Supported in part by a grant from the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting, this report is part of our ongoing series about poverty and opportunity in America, Chasing the Dream.
Los Angeles, the home of some of the most desirable zip codes in the country. But right at the heart of this wealthy metropolis exist conditions that have been described by the city's own newspaper, the Los Angeles Times, as a national disgrace. One expanse of 50 city blocks is an area that's become synonymous with poverty, crime, and homelessness. It's existed for decades and has dogged successive mayoral administrations that have tried to eradicate it. It's called Skid Row, and is home to an estimated 2,000 members of Los Angeles County's homeless community.
L.A. has one of the highest rents in the nation. And the reason why come there's so many tents out here is because people can't afford to live in a house.
Steve Richardson, who goes by the name General Dogon, is an activist at the L.A. Community Action Network, which advocates for the city's homeless community.
The majority of the people that you see sleeping on the streets are black, and these are folks that have fell through the poverty level. It makes me really mad.
Long the subject of local and national concern, Skid Row recently garnered international attention when it became the focus of a report written by the United Nations Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty, Philip Alston, whose job more often involves assessing conditions in the developing world.
The homelessness on the streets in LA is pretty staggering in terms of magnitude in terms of how long running it is. There is a chronic shortage of affordable housing.
Nationally, homelessness has been mostly on the decline since 2010, though it ticked upward slightly in 2017 to nearly 554,000 people without their own roof over their heads in a so-called point-in-time count. The Los Angeles area, meanwhile, has trended in the opposite direction, as the cost of living here soared over the last decade, forcing thousands onto the street in what has amounted to a nearly 50% increase in homelessness since 2012 to almost 53,000 people. The sheer size of Skid Row makes it look like a refugee camp. But according to a 2017 report by several homelessness advocacy groups, the availability of toilets here is worse than in a UN-run Syrian refugee camp.
It smells of urine everywhere. Skid Row had about 10 toilets, I think, for thousands of people. So it's a pretty bad setup.
So this is, call it the Big Green Machine, and it's a bathroom.
According to the LA Community Action Network, nearly 1,800 unsheltered people in Skid Row share access to just 9 toilets like this one, which means many avoid them altogether and use buckets, which are then emptied into the streets and trash cans.
And that was PTSD, but I didn't know nothing about that.
Willie Van Seals is a Vietnam vet suffering from heroin addiction, one of almost 3,900 homeless veterans in L.A. County.
I'll show you. The buckets that we use are urinate, bowel movement. There's nowhere around here to use the bathroom. And that's hard on a person. You know what I mean? Especially you got to walk around and find somewhere to take a crap. Yeah. Come on now.
The authorities know hygiene is an issue here. The county health department reported that its teams observed feces and urine on 8 of 10 sidewalks during a survey back in 2012. Street washes like this one have been instituted to help stop the spread of disease.
If we don't power wash the streets, we end up with what we had years ago when we had a tuberculosis outbreak or hepatitis outbreak or some kind of disease. It has to be done. It has to be done.
Officer Dion Joseph has been patrolling the streets of Skid Row for close to 2 decades. He says he's seen well-meaning policies to improve health conditions backfire.
Years ago, we had 27 porta potties in Skid Row. My concern was that they would be taken over by the criminal element. And day one, that's exactly what happened. When those bathrooms were here, gangsters were charging the homeless $1 to $5 to use the porta potties for what they were designed for.
While we're with him, Officer Joseph receives a complaint.
I've got these people who pulled up in front of the doorway. I've asked them repeatedly to move. And trying to have a rational conversation with the irrational people, I just don't want to do it.
How are you? I'm sorry to bother you. There's a gentleman here who has a business, and the law says you can't be within 10 feet of his doorway. Can you guys move about 10 feet this way so we can have his space?
He resolves the situation without incident. But the UN report points to data from the LA Times showing that 14,000 homeless people were arrested in LA in 2016, a 31% increase since 2011. The report encouraged authorities to shift from a criminal justice response to a human rights-centered response to homelessness.
Homelessness is being criminalized in many ways. And it's as though you sort of keep moving the pieces around the chessboard and suddenly it's going to improve. Instead of saying, okay, we actually need to work out how to create places where these people can go.
I agree with the UN. We shouldn't be the tip of the spear. Fix the system, especially in places like Skid Row, where many individuals struggle with dual diagnosis, where they're addicts and mentally ill. We don't want to be the tip of the spear, but we have to be until a solution's arrived.
According to Victor Hinderleiter of the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, mental health and addiction are a huge factor contributing to homelessness.
Approximately 30% of people experiencing homelessness self-report that they have a severe mental health disorder. About 30% of people experiencing homelessness self-report that they have a substance use disorder. Homelessness in and of itself is a traumatic experience.
Christina Miller, the LA Mayor's Senior Project Manager of Homeless Strategies, agrees that addressing homelessness is a multi-tiered process, but disagrees that the homeless are being criminalized.
And instead of leading with police, leading with enforcement, we are doing everything we can to lead with services, because we know that police officers are not social workers, that it's not necessarily in their purview, and having an enforcement-heavy response is not ultimately going to get people off the streets.
Activists say they know what will get people off the streets.
The solution is simple. This is what the solution is. This is the only thing that ends homelessness, is this right here, house keys. And until everybody got them, hey, you got to be good neighbors, because there's going to be people sleeping on the streets.
There are a lot of solutions that we are focusing on currently in terms of trying to expand our interim shelter bed capacity. But we also know what the only solution is to homelessness, which is permanent housing.
Miller told NewsHour Weekend the city of L.A. had embarked on an unprecedented drive to build 10,000 units of housing for the chronically homeless, those who've repeatedly ended up on the streets or been there for at least a year. It's funded through a $1.2 billion city bond over the next 10 years. That's in addition to a $30 million bridge home program directed at providing interim housing in the meantime. And the efforts may have started to pay off. This year, the homeless count in L.A. County went down for the first time since 2014, only modestly, from 55,000 people to just under 53,000, but it bucks a six-year-long trend in the opposite direction.
We are cautiously optimistic. We are celebrating the fact that there seems to be a change in the direction of the trajectory, and it does tell us that we're doing something right.
Well, they were considerate enough to give us a pantry.
Jose Soto, another veteran, is one of the lucky ones who's recently been housed after years in and out of prison in Skid Row.
So I wanted to stop there for a minute because I just wanted to put that in perspective. In this report, they said that the conditions in that area, now mind you, the UN had just did a report in Alabama previously talking about how the situation in Alabama was worse than in so-called third world nations, okay? Now they just did a report about what's going on in the Skid Row and all that area there. And what I'm trying to show you is that these are not isolated events. They are just hopping from one spot to the next. You can go anywhere. Put your blindfold on. Tell somebody to drive you in the hood anywhere. And you'll see it comparable to or worse than a war zone. America has no money to give you, black man and black woman, charge you exorbitant rates for living, have a military full of you, and yet she won't give you debt relief from child support. She won't give you debt relief from trying to better yourself through college or vocational school. And yet she will take your tax money, money that she stole from you because she didn't ask for you. She didn't ask for it from you. She took it. And if you don't give it, this is what a robber does, right? Think about the mentality of the people on the street. I'm trying to put this in a proper perspective for you to see how America strong arms people. I want you to see just how wicked and evil she is. Now, we talk about people on the street that'll walk up to you and give me what you got in your pocket. Give me those shoes or give me this. And if you flinch, they'll kill you. Or you say, I'm not giving you what I worked hard for. They'll kill you dead and take them, right? Or they'll beat you senseless and take them, right? If you go to the government and say, look, I'm not paying FICA, they'll put you in jail, they'll beat you, they'll kill you. They'll rob you. These are strong arm tactics. But you get, they call it criminality when it's concerning you or people on the street level. But they call it government policy when it's on a government level. You see this? The same method, the same outcome, yet because some people are not connected and are in a poverty or urban setting, it's criminality. But it's something to look forward to in the government sphere. This is why this system must be uprooted. They can send $7,000 a minute at least. They can spend $23,000 at least on a family, each family in occupied Palestine. And then you go and tell them, I need some aid to pay my $500 light bill. Man, they'll cuss you out. You need to go work, even though you have two, three, four, five jobs. Oh, we're not into affirmative action. Do you see the madness in the policies of America? Do you see the justification in Allah removing America by degrees from which she cannot perceive? And all the while, she's lying about how much she's spending on war. Well, in the last few years, we spent about $5 trillion from 2011 to 2017. You're a lie. All of your reports differ. You say in the last, from 2001 to 2017, you spent close to $5 trillion on war. Well, the Mother Jones did an article, and she said you spent $1.6 trillion. All right? I'm listen to the fluctuation and defluctuation of estimates. But PolitiFacts, the ones that go into the numbers, said just the Middle Eastern wars alone, Syria, not including Syria at this moment, so you got to, if you add Syria, it balloons up even more. But just the Middle Eastern wars alone cost America $6 trillion. Trump himself said, out of his own mouth, and you can go to Newsweek.com, that the U.S. spent at least $7 trillion on the Iraq and Middle East wars. All right? So we have a fluctuation and defluctuation. You don't know what to believe. Then they're telling you the U.S. budgetary cost of war for just 2016. Listen to this good. Just for 2016 alone, ran nearly $5 trillion. How the hell can you just spend $5 trillion for all your wars from 2001 up to today when all of these numbers are contradicting themselves? And then America goes and spends another $1 trillion on war preparations. But she still is not getting what Elijah Muhammad said. Let's go to the fall of America. No, I say the other ride. Listen to this good. Allah is well able to take the kingdom from whom he pleases and give it to whom he pleases. This we all know. America should, as it is written. Listen, we're talking about prophetic sayings now. Not talking about what you believe and what you want. We're talking about prophecy in motion now. America should, as it is written, give up the slave and set him on the road to doing something for himself in the way of financing him to do this. Stop right there. This is America's job, not yours. The burden is on America. You paid the price through your sacrifice, through your living in America and being bombarded day and night, night and day with hatred, animosity, the brutality and the viciousness of the entire system. You understand? So it is America's job to do what's right, or else she has to pay the consequences, right? Remember that, Muslims, I'm talking to you now. We believe, remember that, in the core constitution of the Nation of Islam, Muhammad lays out what the Muslims want and what the Muslims believe. Is that not right? So we believe these things. And America goes and she spends trillions and trillions, and she gives away billions and hundreds of billions. And yet when you talk to her about reparations, she turns a blind eye, a deaf ear, and a dumb tongue as though she don't understand, hear, or see. What the hell are you talking about? But she can go and spend $60 billion in Afghanistan to build two apartment complexes. I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, it's corrupt to the core. Sometimes I have to smile, I have to laugh. But Muhammad says this about her rebooting her military, re-energizing her military with the influx of stolen dollars. Muhammad says, right after he talks about it, it's incumbent upon America to put us on the road to self, to do something for ourselves. It's incumbent upon America. That means the onus, the responsibility is on America. Because we did what was incumbent upon us. This is a contractual agreement, and if you break it, death to those who break it. That's not right. He goes and says this. America is spending billions of dollars in a futile attempt to stop the stormy war clouds that are hovering over her concessions. You know who her concessions are, right? We'll go into that later. But she is not getting at the root cause of it. So she just invested $750 more billion in war. She's going to ask for an extension of a war budget so that she can grab another $250 or $300 billion whenever it suits her. So now that puts us well over $1.1 trillion. Then she has a black budget of close to $1 trillion or more dollars that she can pull out for war, for occupation, for sanctions, to break the backs of governments and independent nations and people around the world. Muhammad says, and all of that, she is not getting to the root cause of it. What's the root cause, Muhammad? Go ahead and teach us. The reason why the cloud is rising with destruction is because of her so-called Negro slave whom she refuses to let go. The same thing that happened in Pharaoh's time. I'm telling you, brothers and sisters. She divides them one against the other for her own sake. It has not proven worthwhile. It has proven to be against her own peace because the God of the so-called Negro is on the scene and is directing his own cause, as it is written in the Bible, in Isaiah 43:13. Go read this stuff. America is in trouble. She can't stop the clouds of war. Every time she turns around, she's losing. Her generals say she's losing in Afghanistan. She's losing in Syria. She's losing in the Baltic. She's losing in the Black Sea. She's losing in Africa. Everywhere you turn, she's investing war material there, and she's losing. The nation that spends more than all of the other nations combined, she's losing. Why? Because she is a loser by nature. You understand? The Dead Zone Memoir. Entry number two, the crash is on. See, when you get a desperate nation like that, a desperate power like that, she's willing to do anything. But her moves, her motives are all corrupted. She's blindsided. You know, when a person is anxious, when a person is fearful, when a person is hyped up, sometimes they don't think clearly. They make mistakes, and a mistake will lead to another mistake and another mistake. And before you know it, you have this great machinery of mistakes in motion. And as they build to a crescendo, they roll over all of your so-called sublime thoughts and actions and deeds that you want to put over on the people. I want you to listen to this. Listen closely to this. I think this is Peter Schiff, and they're talking about the arrest of the Howey or Huey, vice president, and how America, well, listen, let me preface that with this, how America thought she could have the, look, she goes behind closed doors and do this, just like she did with Ukraine. When Ukraine went into Russian territorial waters, then she comes out, how dare, that is provocative by Russia. Now, she is orchestrating and instigating behind closed doors so that she can have a clean hand in the public. The same thing, she put pressure on Canada to do these things. But Muhammad had warned North America that they had reached the state about which all the prophets had predicted before her. Right? Remember that? Fall of America. Muhammad had warned them. You understand what I'm saying? He didn't say just America. He said North America. That is a continent, not a nation. And with Canadian provocations under America's tutelage, it brings us closer to conflict and war. I want you to pay close attention to this. And how all of this connects to the economics, okay? Pay close attention.
Now I want to share with you two more varied opinions on these U.S. actions. Here are conservative columnist Steve Malzberg and former British MP George Galloway.
Is extraterritoriality gone absolutely insane? Now, in the 19th century, if this had happened to a British citizen, the government sitting behind me would have dispatched a fleet of gunboats to pound the miscreant power into submission.
I think this is a bold move by the Justice Department and the United States government. You know, under the Obama administration, indictments were issued, but they never went this far, fearing the obvious retaliation from the Chinese government, who might nab U.S. citizens or other governments that might do the same once this genie is out of the bottle, so to speak.
So we have this China issue, and we still don't know what they're going to do, what the Chinese are going to do, which has investors obviously extremely uneasy tonight. And we have the interest rate hikes, which also have already spooked the market and may continue to do so, by the way, as I mentioned a little while ago, because there might be another hike sometime around December 19th. So for a look at this, who better to talk to? I'm joined now by stockbroker and financial commentator Peter Schiff. He and I have had similar conversations like this one before. Peter, Did the this market, it bounced back today at the end of the day, but what I'm hearing is, and maybe you can confirm this for me, is that the reason it started to bounce back is because there's now word coming out of the Fed is that they might suspend the December 19th hikes. What are you hearing?
Well, actually, that's not what was said. I think they're still telegraphing that that hike is on target. What the Wall Street Journal article said was that the Fed is maybe going to take a wait-and-see attitude after that hike, and so maybe we won't have as many hikes in 2019, and I think the market rallied on that. But look, you know, the news last night of the arrest of the Chinese executive, that might have been the catalyst that sparked the sell-off, but this is a bear market. That's why the market went down. If it wasn't that, they would have found another excuse. If we were in a bull market, I think the market would have shrugged it off. So we're going lower. But the bigger point here is that the U.S. flexing that type of muscle is going to backfire. I mean, the dollar having the reserve currency, that status is in jeopardy. And I don't think the world likes giving America this type of power, that we can impose our own rules and then demand that the entire world live by it. So I think this has a much bigger and broader ramifications other than what's going on in the stock market today. I think long term this is going to undermine the dollar and its role as the reserve currency. Yeah. And when that goes, so does the American standard of living, because it'll collapse.
What seemed to me today was that the biggest shockwaves were coming, especially at first at the outset of this thing being announced, from both the Asian and European markets. Why is that? Why were they so, to coin a phrase, shocked by this?
Well, first of all, remember, there's a lot of trade tensions out there. People are hopeful of some kind of peaceful resolution to the trade war. Yeah. I mean, now there's some kind of truce, and obviously some kind of diplomatic incident like this can throw a monkey wrench into the whole situation. So the market is already on pins and needles, again, because this is a bear market. Hmm. If the market were healthier and going up, again, things like this could be shrugged off. But when you're in a bear market and people don't recognize that, they don't want to admit that, but you get this type of reaction to news. And what, I think the rally that we had today is not going to hold.
What's,
you know, the move back off the lows. We're going lower.
What's China going to do? What do you think they'll do? And what will happen if they do something?
I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do specifically in response to this. I mean, China has a right to be upset, and I don't know what they're going to do. But I do think that China is in a much better position than is generally believed. People think that we have the upper hand because, you know, we have this huge trade deficit with China. But I think it's the other way. I think the fact that they supply us with all this merchandise that our economy needs, and the fact that they hold a lot of our bonds and continue to lend us a lot of money so we can live beyond our means, they're the ones, I think, that call the tunes, and we have to dance to it.
But their economy is somewhat wobbly as well, isn't it? Everything I read says they're not exactly in a perfect condition right now.
Nobody's in a perfect condition, least of all the United States. You know, I was listening to the broadcast before I came in, and you talked about how the U.S. economy was sailing along. It wasn't sailing anywhere. It was blowing up like a gigantic bubble. That's what was happening. And now the air is coming out. We are headed for a much worse financial crisis than the one we experienced in 08, and we are headed for a much greater recession than the one we lived through following that crisis, the one that we call the Great Recession. And what's going to make it so much worse is it's going to be inflationary. Consumer prices are going to be going up as the economy is going down.
Yeah, and the point I was making is there was good times in terms of what the Dow was doing and the economy was doing, but you're absolutely right.
Oh.
Most people are saying it was all artificial, which I think is the point you're making, correct?
Yes, it was. It was all a bubble. I mean, Donald Trump said so when he was a candidate. He said it was a big, fat, ugly bubble, and he was right. And he inherited that bubble and proceeded to make it bigger. And so now it's going to pop on his watch, and that has some dire political consequences as well as economic consequences, because that's why I think he's going to be a one-termer.
Stockbroker and financial commentator Peter Schiff, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much, my friend, for joining us here once again.
So, the rationale, a lot of times I like to analyze what people say in their arguments, okay? Because a lot of us, we don't take time to do this, and I know we only have about 16 minutes. We may have to go over maybe 2 or 3 minutes, okay? Because I have to get this clip in. I'm going to bring Rashid in, but I have to analyze this and also read a quote out of Fall of America, all right? So, bear with you, brother. Listen, America's in such a position. Now, remember about 20 years ago, 30 years ago, they were bragging about how all of the nations, when America was so-called a creditor nation, when she was talking about all of the nations are indebted to her. This is how she got into economic and industrial powerhouse position, because all of the nations were devastated, and she still had the manufacturing capacity. So what she did, she had them sign contracts saying that, listen, we'll pay you this if you help us, and then we'll be owing to you on this end, and plus we will use your dollar, and we will do this, we'll be subservient in such a way, and we'll pay X amount of interest. So America used that, and she became the global economic juggernaut. Now, and she bragged about how all of the nations were in debt to her. Now, fast forward to 20, 30, 40, 50 years up to the date, okay? She flipped the script. Let's use a street term. She flipped the script because she is in debt. She said, this is an asset for us. We have leverage over China because we're in debt to China. Now, I want you to stop for a minute and analyze that. We have influence over China because we are in debt to China. Brothers and sisters, does that even make sense to you? I mean, because we don't analyze this stuff. The rationale and the argument for America to sanction China is that we buy, well, you don't buy it. You get it on credit. If you bought it, you wouldn't have deficits, right? So you get it on credit, so China is your lender. How would you think the bank would take it if you say, we have influence over you. We have this house that you help us buy. It costs $500,000. Now, if you don't give us another $500,000, we won't pay the mortgage, and we'll still stay there. Do you see the madness in that rationale and all of the consequences that would come and the blowback that would come behind that? But this is, I'm serious, this is the official position of the American government when pertaining to China. You see, you can't make this stuff up. I'm telling you, it's amazing how it goes over most people's head. This is insanity. But anyway, Brother Rashid, stay patient right there. So we hear this, and remember that the Huawei or Huawei executive, right, was arrested in Canada by the Canadian officials on order of U.S. officials. And the Chinese government issued an order from the foreign ministry saying that there would be grave consequences if the Huawei executive Ming Wenzhao is not released. Now, Canada is owing to China too, whether you know that or not, economically and politically, okay? So, you got two debtor nations, especially Canada, which had to sell off most of its gold, two debtor nations, which comprise mainly the continent of North America, that are trying to pull a stronghold tactic on the number one creditor in the world. What is that? Is that not a crime? But listen, Elijah Muhammad says, America, because he knew America was behind all of the string pulling. And especially North America. Now, he's put emphasis on the continent and not the country. He put emphasis on the continent and not the country. America. And especially, now, when you put that word especially there, you're lighting up something. You're putting it in italics. You're putting it in bold writing. You put it in the parentheticals or parentheses. America. And especially North America has entered into the time that was predicted by Moses and the prophets between him and Jesus. Isn't that something? What is that time? Of economic and political desperation. Because the fallout from their arrogance and policies around the world is now blowing back. You can't push China around. You can't push Russia around. As America sent warplanes over Ukraine, Russia sends her black swans or her white swans, nuclear-armed warplanes, to Venezuela. They can hit any territory in the Western Hemisphere from Venezuela. Do you understand this? Brothers and sisters, I don't think a lot of you understanding what's going on. I'm going to play this clip, but I'm going to bring Brother Rashid in because I know the time is limited. And this clip I want to play is a pretty long clip. It's about Ron Paul and what he's describing about how America would be powerless and broke. Elijah Muhammad said these things now. So the white man is bearing witness. Let me go to the phone lines real quick and bring in our good brother. Brother Rashid, let me say unto you, my brother, As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam, brother. Can you hear me?
Hear you. Loud and clear. Go ahead, my blessed man.
Brother, shifting him. They're still not telling the 800-pound gorilla in the room, talking about it. If you're talking about a greater recession than the one of 2008 and a greater recession of the 1999, then what are you talking about? A total collapse.
That's right.
That's what they never say that. It is a total collapse that's coming to it. But I guess Elijah Muhammad knew what he was talking about, didn't he?
Yeah.
When he was telling them that America would become debtor nation, America would have no money, everybody would want to run away from around. Yeah, you also put up another clip that says, stop making enemies. Look at 1960, People's Independence Baptist Church, Los Angeles, California. Major said that the Savior told him that he's going to bring every last man, woman, and child of America back to America and destroy them all. This thing has come down, and the poor black man is just in the space, brother. What the man said, the people thought that the things were going to continue on and that people were going to remain in what they were in. This is the end of it. Even Donald Trump's election was unique. He's not a politician. He's just like me and you, a regular Joe running for, although he had a lot of money, running for president, getting in office. What did the Secretary of State say? Well, Mr. President, you can't do that. That's a bad law. What did the president say? That all of the people that he brought are crooks. What is 16 of his associates are under indictment.
Yeah.
This is something. This is a unique time in America. It is the collapse of America. We only can see it because the messenger told us what happened. But the people that's on top, they can see what's happening. There's a tape with Minister Farrakhan talking when he was with the messenger, a good tape, where he said I took my son to the Empire State Building. And he said, at the bottom, he said, what do you see, sonny? I see a whole lot, Dad. So he took a lot up to the top where you could see the whole landscape. He said, what do you see now? He said, I see a lot more than I seen when I was down on the ground floor. But that's what a lot of done for us. We are looking at the whole scope of this thing. It's a global crash that's coming where most of us down in on the bottom floor, they can only see what's happening around in their community. You don't see what happens in China affects you. What happens in Iran affects you. They can't see none of that stuff. Tell you what, Elijah Muhammad is on time, baby. And I keep saying over and over and over and over, baby. The black man of America, we got to wear shade. We got to wear shade, brother.
Yes, sir. Wa alaykum salam. And I bear witness. That's why I often and always and will always say it is a very beautiful time to be a follower of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, because we see it crystal clear. And this is the only way I'm able to talk to you and to connect the dots, brothers and sisters. I couldn't do this on my own. I mean, I'm showing you these things by the grace of God through the sacrifice of the last and the greatest messenger of God, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. We can pinpoint these things. We can show it to you. We can touch it. We can smell it, hear it, taste it, feel it, see it. We can do all that. And then we can paint a picture for you. Because right now, all you're looking at is empty canvas. You know, when you're looking at an artist, a painter, when you're looking at it, sometimes when they're drawing and when they're sketching, you see scribble, you see all cloudy stuff, and then when they start branching out and start connecting it, you say, oh, that is a beautiful portrait. That is beautiful background. That's beautiful scenery. Oh, that's detail. Oh, that's, but you couldn't see it in the beginning. So that's why we have to lay the base. I know we have like 6 minutes left, brothers and sisters, but would you bear with me? You give me about, because I have some things to do, but because I don't want to end the show like this, I have so many clips. I often get clips from all kinds of things so that just in case I talk on it, I can prove it to you because I know we from Missouri. You'll question me on everything, but you'll never question that white man or whoever you follow on anything. So I want you to listen. Give me about, I know it's going to be 6 minutes extra, so give me about 8 to 10 minutes of your time. That's only about 5 to 6 minutes extra as we roll off the air time. Don't click over on your phones, okay? Pay close attention. And for you who are listening, if you get cut off, especially when we go off and we're still streaming, go right back and listen to the show and invite somebody else to do it. And also, go to the Health Blaze and support black-owned business. It's our sponsor. It's our business. It's all black-owned, all-natural health care products, okay? Go do that. And also, go to the Hirons 1555 blog and donate for the Star and Crescent Report and the Hirons 1555 blog. We really appreciate every penny, every dollar, and every word. So listen closely to Mr. Ron Paul as he addresses this issue. This is a 12-minute clip.
From the U.S. National Headquarters of RT America, hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. So there are three multinational telecom companies in the world, and we're all very familiar with two of them for sure. Who's the biggest telecom company in the world? The answer is Samsung. It's Korean. Who's number two? Well, if you answered Apple, you would be wrong. Apple is number three. So who's the second biggest telecom company in the world? The answer is the Chinese telecom giant Huawei. Now, that is why the arrest of its CFO, who also happens to be the daughter of the founder of this huge company, that's why it's turning into such a huge international incident, this thing. Meng Wanzhou is her name. She will have a bond hearing at some point today in Canada where she was arrested at the behest of the United States and will now be extradited with, according to Bloomberg News, the support of the White House. The fact that the United States would arrest one of their citizens has China furious, as you might imagine. Here's the official statement from the Chinese embassy in Canada following the arrest. They're saying, quote, at the request of the U.S., the Canadians arrested a Chinese citizen who was not violating any American or Canadian law. The Chinese side firmly opposes and strongly protests. And the Chinese, by the way, are also calling the arrest a violation of human rights that must be corrected immediately. There's more. Here is what the Chinese Ministry of Commerce is saying about what the U.S. did.
We are seriously concerned about the report. The Chinese government always encourages Chinese companies to follow the market principle and international rules and respect local laws and regulations when carrying out investment and cooperation overseas.
That's the spokesperson, by the way. Now, the U.S., by most indications, is punishing Huawei for selling communications equipment to Iran. But Huawei company officials are saying that it has been provided so far very little information regarding the charges and is not aware of any wrongdoing. That's what they say. So the question is, where is this going to lead as the world's two largest economies dig their heels in what could become an escalating international incident? I'm Rick Sanchez. This is RT America, where it is time to do news again. We begin, as you might expect, with this story of the U.S. and China and the tensions between the two superpowers. This is a story, by the way, that could affect the entire planet from both an economic and a geopolitical standpoint. And it's happening at a time when there are already existing economic issues as well as other issues of sovereignty and wars, well, that are right up the alley of our next and first guest. Here now is former Congressman Dr. Ron Paul on the question of whether the United States should have arrested this Chinese business executive.
Hardly. I think they're on very shaky legal grounds. But if you just go back to a little common sense, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. No, and some of the so-called excuses for this is, you know, we're the dominant power and we have to throw our weight around and people have to do what we tell us, what we tell them. So I don't understand why Canadians will oblige us and go and do these things. But this whole idea that, oh, well, maybe they have violated our sanctions. When we put sanctions on Iran and people are supposed to obey us, that's the part that bothers me. I don't like that attitude. I don't think it's necessary. I think it provokes people. I think it endangers us and it's not good for our national security. Mm. And now, you know, and one thing is there may be a few people agreeing with that assessment because all of a sudden, you know, the other day it wasn't too good on the stock market and it's not doing real well now. And it's a reflection of this disruption in common sense and talking to people and practicing a little bit of diplomacy.
By the way, though, and I should mention that I made you a senator, and you should thank me for the promotion. I think I was thinking of your son, Dr. and Congressman Ron Paul. Okay, let me fire back at what you just said. Now, the Trump administration is saying that they're convinced Iran is building nuclear weaponry, and they believe they have to do everything possible to isolate them, and that is what they would use as their defense for arresting this executive. What would you say to that?
Well, I'm sorry because I lost the last half of that sentence. I think I heard the bringing up the question of whether Iran is building a nuclear weapon. Well, if you're concerned about it, I would think that one would endorse the agreement, imperfect as it was. At least the Iranians were never proven that they didn't obey the treaty of reducing and refusing to build a nuclear bomb. So I would say it's made it worse by us getting out of it. I don't think they have the evidence. I think the UN inspectors that went in there have always verified that they have obeyed the rules and regulations and that they weren't guilty of disobeying the rule, you know, the treaty. So I think it was a big mistake. I think it's going in the wrong direction. And for us to be obsessed with, you know, our foreign policy has to be tough. We have to make sure that Iran never gets a nuclear weapon. Well, I think what's happened here in the last 6 months is actually accelerating their desire or their need to have a nuclear weapon. So I find that foreign policy of interventionism not worth much. I think it's very dangerous.
Let me switch topics if we can. We've now been at war with Afghanistan for more than 17 years. And Mr. Trump recently blamed Pakistan, in fact, for not helping us enough. Here's what Pakistan's Minister of Human Rights said today. I want you to take a listen and then respond on the other side. Here she is.
The problem with the Americans is that their policy has been exposed to being wrong. Their policy has failed. Their military approach has absolutely failed. There is more chaos. There is more terrorism. There are more deaths now in Afghanistan than ever before, despite a heavy NATO and U.S. military presence. So the Americans have realized what we had realized a long time ago, that at the end of the day, you have to come to the dialogue table to bring about peace.
What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's a great statement. And what she is actually saying is in a very subtle way describing the foreign policy that our institute promotes, and that is a policy of foreign non-intervention and mind our own business. Stay out of there. Don't put sanctions on people. Don't throw our weight around. Don't put our military up on the borders of Russia. And all these things would just make it worse. And then when you get involved in, you know, Pakistan and India and Iran and Iraq, you know, we who follow this non-interventionist procedure, we've been arguing the case, why are we there? And I don't think you can get a better manager and solve the problem. It isn't a lack of a good manager, a good military manager. It's the fact that the policy's wrong, the policy of interventionism. And they say, oh, that's isolationism. It isn't isolationism. It's addressing the people around the world in a friendly manner, in a manner of trade. That's why we don't like all this protectionism and sanctions. We want to talk to people. We want more freedom of movement and sharing of for trade and all these things. But I think it's tragic in the way we're going, and unfortunately, it's a foreign policy. It's Donald Trump speaks out loudly about it, but believe me, the foreign policy of intervention has been around a long time. And just think of what we have done in the United States since World War II. We don't even follow the basic premise that our governments aren't supposed to go to war unless the people endorse it through a vote in the Congress. We don't do that anymore. So we have gone way out of our way to look for enemies. I think it's a tragedy. I think it will do us harm because I think we'll be like all other empires. We won't be able to afford it. And right now, I think it's very shaky. What you're seeing in the markets now is a sign that this is not going to last. And besides, when we tell people what to do, eventually, we gain more enemies and less friends than the people that we should be friendly with.
You know, there's something interesting going on right now I think you're going to relate to. For the longest time, it was the hardliners, the conservatives, the neocons, the right, the Republicans, your party, who were the ones who were really super anti-Russian. Then after the Trump election, it seems like the left has become extremely anti-Russian for some obvious reasons. And now it almost seems like because the left is being anti-Russian, the Trump administration is having to be anti-Russian. It's like the perfect storm, right? Like a trifecta. Here's a response today from a Russian official reacting to the United States' threats of getting out of one of its treaties. Take a listen.
One gets the impression that the ground is being laid for the eventual termination of START 3. The U.S. has identified a certain missile and claims that it was tested at a distance prohibited by the treaty. Our data says that both the distance and the conditions of the test were in accordance with the treaty.
What do you make of the anti-Russian environment and the comments by Lavrov today wondering why the United States is wanting to get out of one of its START treaties?
Well, he makes more sense than sometimes what I hear in my own country because we just don't need to be doing those kind of things and not going around and provoking and being involved. I think it's tragic about what NATO is doing in Eastern Europe. This is a problem. So I think that we're just going in the wrong direction, and that someday we're going to wake up and we're going to find out that we're going to have to change our way, because not only will this policy fail and it will make more enemies and friends, we're going to go broke. Technically, we're already broke, but someday they're going to give up on us as a powerful nation. Now we have the military and the financial power, and we have no sense that we have some responsibilities to at least be reasonable in dealing with other nations. We're just going around to show them how tough we are. But I'll tell you what, we should be more cautious, and that is why the Institute for Peace and Prosperity that I have works for trying to find some peaceful solutions, and one of non-intervention and openness and travel and talking to people. I used to talk in the presidential campaign. You know, there are a lot of diplomats in our State Department. It's about time we started using them, but we don't seem to do it. We have a lot of noise. One thing we can't figure out is, you know, Trump says some things, and he wanted to be friends with Russia. Then all of a sudden, he ended up with a bunch of neocons in his administration. So that's a real quandary for me.
Well, you know what? It's always a pleasure having you on, Congressman, Doctor.
See, in so many words, you heard what he said. At the end, he took a big shot at Trump. I'm telling you, did you hear what he said at the end? Trump said he wanted to be friends with Russia. But how in the world did he end up with those neocons in his administration? In words, he was saying that Trump was lying. He was in cahoots with it. I've been telling you this for the longest. Now you have one person who was in the halls of power is telling you the same thing. He's talking about how the economics and the geopolitics are related. And when one collapsed, the other collapsed. This is what we're telling you. The crash is on. Now, Brother Rashid made a statement. And he talked about how they keep talking about a recession worse than 2002, a recession worse than 2008, worse than 2010 and 2012. And he says, what are they talking about? And he posed that question to you, and he's talking about a total collapse. They also said that this one, and I was remember looking right in Jim Rogers' face when he talked about how this would make the Depression of the 1930s looked like child's play. Now remember how they talk about this as a reference point to how bad things got in America, 1930s. All right? It was also the year that one grand person, presented himself and taught a man who was teaching us about what we see and how it ends. Notice it started like that and it's ending like that. We're in a time of complete collapse. And all of this is to make the world see that America is the cause of their problems. And when they see this, they all will move against America. Let me say something real quick. The doom of America approaches. And there are many people who do not really know why. There are also many who would not like to know. As I have always said, the truth hurts, especially the guilty. It is the express purpose of the coming of God, whose proper name is Allah, to make manifest the sins of the people who he would destroy, justifying his destruction of that people. So now we get a justification of why God is after America, because she is enemy number one. Look at her policies. Even Ron Paul is talking about her lying and her deceptive ways, her arrogance and her war-making policies. God got to get rid of that. If there ever is supposed to be a war, a world of peace and tranquility, the greatest obstacle to that must be removed, because it is the greatest impediment to peace and stability, right? And in this, as the world turns against America, it is to help, knowingly or unknowingly, place the black man, especially the black man and woman here in North America, back on top of civilization. And Muhammad says, we are now living in the days of the judgment. And in the days of a great separation of peoples and nations, this is what I'm telling you, the separation is not to come. We are in the midst of it right now, Muhammad says. This problem of separating you and me from our enemies and placing us in our own land, back among our own people, and raising the so-called Negroes of America up to our proper place in civilization is taking place. Whether you acknowledge it, whether you see it, whether you think you feel it or not, it is underway. How do we know this? Muhammad says, remember, because most of you forget this. Remember, it was Muhammad who found the black stone out of his place and invited the four chiefs from the four divisions to come forward and take hold of each corner of the mantle and lift it into his place. Remember, in case you forgot, that it was Muhammad with his own hands, who guided it into its place. This was a symbol of you and me today. So you can't get around prophecy. We need the help of our people who are living in the four major points of our compass to come and help raise us, their dead brothers, and put us back into our own place. It is our own nation, among our own people in our native land. So this is what is taking place. So God is alienating America from China, right? He's alienating America from Africa. He's alienating America from South and Central America, right? Because the nations will move on America, and as America falls, and she has no power or no attraction to keep us subjected to her, we rise. This is the breaking of the white man's power. This is the removing of the greatest obstacle of peace. This is the fall of America and the rising up and resurrection of those who are dead in God. Brothers and sisters, with an undying love and passion for the liberation, the upliftment, and the redemption of 68 million of our kind, first here in America, then the billions around the world, know that your brother Rashid Muhammad loves you to life, but the love that I have for you pales in comparison to the love that my God, Almighty God Allah, Master Farad Muhammad, his messenger, the greatest and the last messenger of God, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, and that mighty, mighty Nation of Islam has for you. Until we next speak again, stay strong, stay true, but above all things, stay righteous. Love you all. Assalamu alaikum.
For information on our next show, please visit trumpetoftruth.wordpress.com. And click on the Blog Talk Radio button. Until we converse again, always remember,
no matter how low society may have rendered you, the wisdom of the one true God lifts you on high. May God bless and keep you. The Star and Crescent Report was created and directed by Rashid Muhammad, produced by Nicole Muhammad, and hosted by Rashid Hiram, 1555 Muhammad. Have a blessed day.
That I like the mood I'm in. Day to day, the roads we take.